Thank you, Deborah, for such a beautiful, wonderful talk. It's just, I don't have words for it. I never... Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, hi. My name is Adina Barron, and I'm going to introduce Abigail Steinharder, who will speak on sense and sensitivity, the Torah's guide to interacting with the world and people around us. Please see your program for her bio. May the Torah learning inspiration that we get tonight be a merit for the speedy recovery of Tzipora Bas Zero.
Thank you, Deborah. That was so much fun. Where is Deborah? Oh, thank you. That was so much fun, and I learned a lot. I was really looking forward to that talk, and I definitely was not disappointed. And welcome, everyone, once again. It feels so good to be surrounded by so many friends, new friends, longtime friends. It's just so great to be a part of this group, and I love to see how the Denver Community Kollel reaches so many lives with unique and great opportunities like this one. So thank you to the Kollel for inviting me to share with you tonight. About 10 years ago, I gave birth to a baby, and the midwife that was supposed to be in attendance was not. I don't know what happened, but she didn't make it. And there was a deck doctor in the hospital, and it was really fine. And I was very pleased. I had no complaints. Everything went fine in my eyes. A few weeks later, I got a bill. And it itemized what the bill was for. And it said, you know, the visits. And this was after insurance had paid the doctor. I was thinking, if you're a midwife or an OB or related to one, you might not like this story, but this is what happened. Thank you. So thank you very much. That was very nice. I saw that this bill included the birth that was not attended. So I was very naive, and I thought it was a little mistake. So I called the office, and I said, oh, I think there was a little mistake in the bill, and I'll gladly pay for the visits. But I don't even remember her name, but she wasn't there. So, you know, I thought they'd say, oh, sorry about that, and you'll send me a new bill. But the woman in the billing department became, like, very heated up, and I was totally taken aback, and she said, oh, no, that is not the way it works around here. We bill globally, and you need to pay for that service. And I'm, like, so not used to confrontation and that kind of thing, and so uncomfortable with it that I hung up the phone, and I thought, okay, then that's what I'll do. But my husband did not see things that way, and he consulted legal counsel, and they said services were not rendered. You're not supposed to pay for a service that was not rendered. So I was very uncomfortable because I said I'm not so comfortable with confrontation, and just I felt like I was going against something that was told to me. I was just not, didn't know where to put myself. And the bills kept coming, and they were very, they were not uncomfortable with confrontation. And they were really harassing and going through the whole process that a person would go through if they didn't pay a bill. And it went to collections, and it kept getting more and more uncomfortable and just putting me in a position that I didn't feel like I could handle. And things got even more interesting and dramatic when... my door was open one day, so I didn't have any choice when what happened. I saw a minivan pull up in front of my house. No, it didn't take me to jail, but I saw a minivan pull up in front of my house, and this white-haired gentleman, very grandfatherly looking, knocked on my door. So like I said, the door was really open, so I came to it, and I said, can I help you? He said, are you Abigail? And I said, yeah. And he stuck something in my hand. And I looked at this envelope, and it was a subpoena to court. And I'm so not used to that. I don't want to say this, but I've never had jury duty yet. And I, like, really am not comfortable with anything like this. And I thought, okay, I'm just giving in. I'm sending them the money. And luckily, I mean, my husband just stuck with what he was told, and he said no. We're not, I don't know what he said I should do about the subpoena. I was picturing myself, you know, standing there, Your Honor, what happened was, the baby was born, and I didn't even know what it was going to be like to go to court about something like this. within the same period of time, and I was pretty distressed. I mean, other things were going on as well, but it was bothering me, and I felt like a criminal, really. Within that time period, I got a letter and phone calls from some people that had been my students probably 15 years prior, different state, different part of the country. They had been my students when they were young, like 14 probably, like early high school. And they themselves, who are young women now, had done some soul searching, which is really special and admirable. And they came to their recognition that perhaps they had not treated me with kindness when I was their teacher. And it was really a cultural thing that I was from a different culture than they, and they did not know how to handle that. And it was true. It really was not a positive experience. And they contacted me. They were not the first people from their group, but they contacted me at that time and said, we would like you to write an article for our community newsletter about your experiences, because we don't want more people to have the experience that you had. And we don't want our children, or I don't know if it was at that point yet, but our younger siblings or something, to have an experience to give an experience like we gave. And so they asked me to write an article about my experiences, and I did. And mostly they asked me, please, please, can you find it in your heart to forgive us? We know we made your life miserable. And I went through, it was a great set of conversations. We had a lot of back and forth, and we connected very nicely. They're all lovely people, and I wrote the article and another article and, all this. And I said to them, of course, I forgive you. I forgive you. It was a long time ago, and I forgive you. 2 days after I said that, I got another letter from the law office. And I was like, not again. And I opened the letter, and it said, Dear Ms. Steinharder, this is to inform you that case 007-19, the case against you, between you and midwifery, whatever, has been dropped. The case against you is closed. No further action is necessary.
Whoa.
And that struck me. I don't know who can say what causes what, but it did happen within days of me saying to somebody else, I forgive you. It was kind of like the law office or the doctor or whomever thought I did some crime was saying, we forgive you. And I felt like what we put out comes back to us. And what we think about, we attract. And what we believe comes true for us. I have a friend named Roberta, some of you know her, and I got her permission to share this with you. And I like being in her presence. And I think that the reason that I so enjoy being around her is because she often says things like, my life has gone so well. She is not young, and she can look back on her life and say, has gone so well. She says things like, I have everything, and my life has gone so well, has worked out so well. She says things like that regularly, regular conversation. And when I first heard her say that, I thought about it, and I thought about what I know of her life, and I didn't think it went so well. In my eyes, I thought that her life looked challenging. I mean, she has beautiful blessings, but I thought that she grew up in the Great Depression. She faced many challenges that people would consider formidable. She experienced things that I think anyone would consider a tragedy, like the loss of a very special man, her only son, her only child, at a pretty young age. But when you talk to her about this, she will reiterate only, oh no, my life has gone so well, and she'll tell you why. This gave me that, and that gave me this, and this was an experience that helped me with that, and she'll just insist. And I think, like, most of us would just admire her if she said, I can't complain. But she says things like this all the time, and with energy, she says these things. She lives a life of joy. And when I see people like this, and I know that you might know people like this as well, I think that we have a great power, to influence our own well-being. And a big part of that power comes from our own positive choices, such as our interaction, as the choices in our interactions with and our view of other people. So quantum physics, just got interested in that, suggests that thoughts have an energy to them, as do emotions. And researcher John Kehoe, if you're familiar with the topic, you're familiar with his name, John Kehoe spent years researching the investigating the power of our mind, and now he goes around teaching people what he believes to be how our mind influences our health and our well-being. The prophet, long time before John Kehoe, the prophet Habakkuk taught in the book of Habakkuk, "Bitzadik be'emunaso yichya," and a righteous person, which we all have the ability to be, a righteous person lives through his emuna, through his beliefs, through his trust. What we think and how we think of it becomes our reality. It's, our cells have receptors that can catch the energy of our thinking. So, positive thoughts and feelings like love, gratitude, contentment, trust, hope, faith, appreciation, those thoughts and feelings, they nourish our body like food. And they strengthen us. Christine Carter writes in Psychology Today, and many others too as well, just for one example, that levels of serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter that is associated with well-being and mood, happiness, those levels of serotonin, they rise measurably in many situations, but in someone doing a kindness. And they rise measurably in someone who is receiving a kindness, and serotonin levels have been observed to rise even in someone observing a kindness in which they're not involved. This probably doesn't come as such a surprise. The study that she cites found that participating in what we call chesed protects one's overall health. It prevents, what does she say? She says, prevents heart disease twice as well as 2 aspirins a day. How about that? Studies connect doing kindness with longevity, greater immunity, lower rates of depression, fewer pains, and of course, higher self-worth. And by contrast, negative thoughts and feelings cause stress hormones to be released in our body. And a pessimistic viewpoint has been linked in studies with higher rates of infectious diseases and aches and pains and earlier mortality. I was reading that in a university hospital where people are treated for burns, I didn't take down the names because I wasn't sure that I was going to tell this over. a doctor tried seeing if the people that had suffered burns would be able to absorb and not reject their skin grafts better if he would help them with overcoming the anger associated with the burn. It seemed that anyone who had gone through such a thing, of course, understandably, would have anger toward themselves or whoever else was involved in causing the burns, right? And so he did, I think in this case it was like hypnosis, he did something to help them. He made suggestions for them to focus on healing instead of focusing on their anger. And he measured that they received their skin grafts and didn't reject them better. That mind-body connection is definitely there. Some of us have experienced it firsthand. When you become aware, you see it all the time. And we know that great potential for improving our lives is in our hands. We'll find that we can't always change our story, but we can always change our experience with our story. Especially we as women. You know, in the Hebrew language, I know a lot of you are familiar with this, the Hebrew language ascribes significance. Well, every letter in the Hebrew language has a numerical value, and so there's a significance to the numerical value. If two words have the same number value, then we call that matters. That means something. Two words that have the same numerical value are the Hebrew word for woman, Isha, and Divash, which means honey. You can make your own interpretation of why that is, but I'm going to share something with you. So they're both equal to, what, 306. And so I think one reason why Isha and Vash have the same value in their numbers is because, let's say salt. We add it to food. It definitely enhances the flavor of the food that's already there. It does not create its own, but enhances the flavor that's there. Honey, on the other hand, and there are other things like this, but honey was the classical sweetener. In former times, there was no sugar or agave or splenda or whatever. So honey was the sweetener in Tanakh, you know. Honey gives its own flavor. It is not just an enhancer. Honey, it will overpower, actually, the food that you put it in, and you have to want it to taste like honey. You can't just, you know, sweeten unless you want that honey flavor. You've probably noticed that women specifically, and there surely are men like this, and there are women who have it less, but as a rule, women specifically have this power, like honey, first of all, to be sweet, but also to alter the atmosphere and the experience of those around us. Set that tone, set that atmosphere, due to our powers of connection to people and to our environment. Women in general are relationship beings, of course, generalities, but women are relationship beings in general, and that power of connection connects to this. So all the people that come our way, if it's a stranger in a crowd, we learned a lot about that tonight, a stranger in a crowd, or our nearest friends and relatives, and everybody in between, really, represents an abundance of opportunity to improve our well-being. In fact, I remember being surprised when Rabbi Zelig Pliskin wrote in a book, when I read that he wrote in a book, that those whom we may find difficult in some way or another, everybody relates differently to different people, and if I find somebody difficult, Rabbi Pliskin and others suggest that we can think of this person as my partner in a journey to a good life and better health and wellness. How? When we focus on the good in another person, we attract goodness into our lives. I've heard it said that love is the pleasure of seeing the good in another person. You might notice, if you stop and pay attention to the feelings in your jaw, in your rest of your muscles, in your inner organs, in your heart rate, when you think angry or judgmental thoughts, and compare those to the physical experience you have when you view people with love and you let go of judgment and you view them with understanding, you might feel those scientific principles that we mentioned in action in your own body. Our five senses are a gift to us that can help us be in the present and experience our experiences, mindfulness, right? Rather than walk around with a racing, calculating mind, which we all know just gets in the way of a happy life. When we believe that Hashem has enough for all of us, when we believe that no one takes what was meant for me, never, we invite that abundance and calm into our lives. King Solomon writes in Proverbs, Urekav Atzamos Kina. He writes a lot of things about kina, jealousy. One thing he writes is, jealousy is a rotting of the bones. Jealousy kills from inside. Jealousy is like an autoimmune disease. It hurts from the inside. When we show compassion to someone who is weaker, or compassion to someone who tests our patience, we invigorate ourselves. We bring positive self-worth in, and we invite Hashem to treat us with compassion. Sometimes it's a good idea. When we notice that something is lacking in our own lives, let's say at a given moment, okay, to try to pay attention, what could I use right now? Just at this second, what could I use right now? It could be something small or something big. And then try to give a little sampling of that thing that we feel like we could use to someone else. If it's support, friendship, a listening ear, financial help, a blanket, I'm a little cold right now. Friendship, inspiration. Give a little to someone else and watch what happens. It almost feels like magic. As King Solomon, too, wrote in Ecclesiastes, Shalach lachmecha al pnei hamayim, ki berov hayamim timtzeenu. Cast your bread upon the waters, because over time, you will find it. It will come back to you. We know this. What you give, you get. When we forgive and we don't require others to honor us, we free ourselves to enjoy our many gifts and the plethora of pleasures that are available in every moment. In fact, you might know, carrying around that
bag of resentment, because we've all had exchanges that have not been pleasant for us. It's impossible for every person to be perfect in all their interactions with us, right? So resentments and anger and not forgiving, it's like, well, you probably can make up your own, you know, parable, but it's like taking poison and hoping that the other guy dies. Or it's like carrying this person that you obviously don't like so much around in you rent-free. Whom are we harming when we allow ourselves to be weighed down by resentments and our bad memories and carrying that heavy backpack, right? Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, be grateful to strangers, just a crowd of anonymous humans, which of course we are not to each other, right? Because just compare the experience of walking down a dark, deserted street to the experience of walking down a street in the dark, but it's well populated. He said this idea, and the next time after I heard this, I got off a plane at midnight, and I noticed that what he said is true. I was walking off a plane with 100 strangers or however many passengers are on a flight, and we're all walking to baggage claim, and I did not know any of them, but I saw that these strangers were doing a service to me because I didn't imagine what it was like, what it would be like to walk through Newark Airport at midnight and you're the only person there. Right? You can't compare. So these strangers were actually my friends. You understand we're not suggesting that we strike up a conversation with every person. It might not even be safe in such a setting, but that's not the point. The point is there's something to be grateful for. And Rabbi Miller also said, the most important and respectable thing in the world is a human face. This is what he said. It has the imprint of Hashem on it. You might know that as Tzalem Elokim, right? It has the imprint of Hashem on it. Every human is a beautiful light. Perhaps this is why, I was thinking about this idea, and I thought maybe this is why many have the custom, not everybody, that if they light Shabbos candles, that many have the custom that on their Shabbos candles, if they have a new baby, if they're blessed with a new baby, they add another light to the candelabra every Shabbos, because every person is really a light. And I think perhaps you could say too that the Ner Neshama, you might know that as the Yahrzeitlicht, is what we light. That's what remains of a person after they pass on. That's what remains in this world that we light each year on the Yahrzeit, the date of their passing, because truly, every person is a beautiful light. Every person's soul comes from Hashem, who is the light of all lights, and every person is a light. To see the beauty and the light in our lives, and the beauty and light in every person, we must, of course, first, and it's impossible otherwise, we must first see it in ourselves. This should not be confused with haughtiness or conceit. It is vital, it is valuable to appreciate ourselves, our core value, our accomplishments, and our strengths. When we are aware of our own worth, and when we acknowledge our triumphs and we make note of them, then we can be ready to do all the great things that we know we want to do. So I would like to suggest that the very best self-care, we're at a women's wellness event, and we want to think about this, the very best self-care in which we can involve ourselves. And perhaps one could say massages and manicures and things may be helpful as well. But I would say above and beyond all of the other self-cares that could be done, the ultimate self-care that we can do is to cultivate a belief in Hashem's kindness in my life, and in our own innate goodness. We must take the time to appreciate the goodness he does for us and the good that we ourselves do. So we can think this way then about other people. And then we can truly sense the beautiful life that Hashem has given all of us. Thank you so much. You've been such a great audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Abigail. Thank you so much for your Torah wisdom. That was beautiful. So beautiful. Stick around for one more minute. We're going to, we have dessert in the back, and we're going to do the raffle in just 1 minute. So get your tickets out. My name is Mimi Pomerantz, and my husband and I are so happy. It's our pleasure to host this event for the Kollel at Altura Periodontics. So every Friday, Rana Kark, my dear friend Rana Kark, and I learn with our dear friend Esty Schwab. And whenever it's described to me as partners in Torah, which it is part of the Kollel program, Partners in Torah, it is, but really, Esty is one of my closest friends. At this point, Ron and I were just talking earlier. We think we've been learning for probably about 10 years now, and at least 5 or 6 of those has been with Esty, thank God. So we're so grateful. It's been life-changing for me. So you, too, can have a partner in Torah. The Kollel offers Partners in Torah opportunities for women, and throughout the week, throughout the city, in person or virtual over the phone, Skype. Starting January 20th, in just a couple weeks, a week really, there'll be a weekly lunch hour gathering where a bunch of partners will meet face-to-face at the same time. So this is the flyer. It was at the table back there. You can have a look at it. They're going to be meeting at AISH on Wednesdays at 12:30. So please speak to, if you're interested, please speak to any one of the Kollel staff, and you can sign up tonight at the registration table on your way out.